And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and our theme today is language. My first guest warned us about the pitfalls in the language of Proposition 19. That's the Regulate, Control, and Tax Cannabis Act. My second guest told us about the wit and charm of Noel Coward, who refined the English language throughout the 20th century. My next guest will help us master language and give us 12 ways to say things right when it matters the most. Whether you're trying to motivate a team, negotiate a contract, make a sale, ask for a raise, land a new job, terminate an employee, the conversation that you have will either help you to succeed or undermine your goal. My next guest has spent more than two decades studying how the things people say impact their business and their professional life. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. It's Sean Kent Hasagi is a founder and CEO of Professional Development Corporation. She's the author of five business communications books. Her company shows people how to improve their communication skills. Boy, do I need that after that last one. Clients include Fortune 500 companies, mid-sized companies, universities, entrepreneurial organizations. Sean has an MS in Organization Dynamics from the University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school, and a BA in English from Susquehanna University. Welcome to the show, Sean. How are you today?
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. It's wonderful to have you, and boy, do I need communication skills, because I was stumbling there just a moment ago, wasn't I?
So, well, you know, I think it's something that we all do every day, and since we don't get a lot of practice on it intentionally, it's something we all need.
That is so true. Now, let's cut right to it. You've got a beautiful new book. I love it. It's Conversations for Change, 12 Ways to Say It Right When It Matters the Most, and you believe that people need to be more intentional in what they say. Too often people communicate in a passive sort of way. So that begs the question, though, Sean, aren't some people just naturally better communicators than others?
Well, some people are more naturally drawn to connecting with others. Some people are more naturally extroverted and like to be in social situations. But that doesn't necessarily make them better communicators.
Okay. All righty. So go on.
There's a foundation that we need to put in place so that we can be good at every type of conversation. And the foundation really has three parts to it. It's emotional intelligence, understanding workplace motivators, and then understanding our own and other people's communication style.
All right, well, let's break those down, Sean, because those are sort of the building blocks of your book. So building emotional intelligence. Give us some examples of emotional intelligence, will you?
Yes, definitely. So emotional intelligence is being able to use seven core emotions and five competencies or skills together. So the seven core emotions, these are what we marinate in, if you will. And the highest vibration of emotion is love. And we experience that when we're passionate about our work, when we get a project that we just can't wait to get into. The next level of emotion is joy, and then hope, and then sadness, and then envy, anger, and fear. And each of these emotions has a chemical marinade that associates with it. And so depending on what we're thinking about, depending on what triggers are going on around us, we're going to experience one of these seven core emotions.
All right. Now, isn't fear a more dominant emotion than, say, sadness or joy or love?
Well, fear is actually a learned emotion.
Mm.
So the other ones are not learned emotions. They come naturally to us. But fear we learn from watching other people's behavior, or we learn it from our parents. And so, therefore, if we're not careful, fear can easily take over. And that's why it's so important to be consciously aware of what we're feeling in the moment and to realize that we can set up triggers, things around us, experiences that will get us marinating in more of the hope, love, joy.
All right. That makes some sense. Now, is hope really a natural emotion, or is that also a learned emotion?
Well, hope is this marinade that I described, this chemical combination, is one that comes naturally. So it is a part of who we are to be inspired and to be eager to reach out, try new things, if we are allowing ourselves to experience that emotional vibration.
All right, Sean. So those are the seven core emotions. What are the five skills?
So the five skills, the first one is self-awareness, and that's knowing what I'm feeling in the moment and letting the current feeling inform my actions but not control my actions. The second competency has to do with self-regulation, which is that piece about saying, I notice myself feeling angry right now. Something has crossed my boundaries. And rather than reacting out of anger, we use the emotion to inform us to say, I recognize I need to have a conversation with this person about what my boundaries are, and doing it in a healthy way and asking for what we want rather than letting the anger take over us so that we explode or go to a passive-aggressive place, something like that. But the next one is motivation, understanding what really drives us, what our core strengths are, and what really engages us so that we can put ourselves into positions, assignments, projects, volunteer opportunities that really play to our core strengths and keep us motivated. The next one is empathy. And empathy is our ability to understand what someone else would be feeling and to speak that into the conversation in a way that engages them, in a way that acknowledges and really shows that we're listening. And then the fifth is social skills, which has to do with our ability to bring a group of people together, or maybe a family together, and get the group focused on common goals, a mutual purpose, and have progress, create forward movement so that we're not getting stuck in emotional yuck.
All right, we're talking to Sean Kent Heihachi, everybody. Her book is Conversations for Change, 12 Ways to Say It Right When It Matters the Most. So those are the seven core emotions, the five skills that we need. Now, one of the other things that you talked about was understanding workplace motivators. What are some of the workplace motivators we need to have dialed into?
So in my book, I highlight the six different workplace motivators, and there's also an assessment that people can take that enables them to see which of the six basic workplace values are driving their behavior. So utilitarian is a value that has us wanting to be productive. And people who have high utilitarian also want to be financially well off. They like to do things that are highly practical and have a great return on investment. Another one of the six workplace motivators is an aesthetic motivator. When someone has this, they want to feel good, look good. They want things around them to look good. Artists, creative types, people who are very subjective, poets, chefs, musicians would be driven by this aesthetic
value. All right, yeah.
The next one is theoretical. And when somebody is driven by the theoretical value, they want answers. They love to solve problems. They like facts, data, the truth, sharing knowledge. So some professions or projects that reward the theoretical value would be teaching, being a professor, perhaps being a lawyer who solves complex problems.
Being a consultant, would that fall under the theoretical?
It certainly could, particularly if you were consulting in large, complex problem situations. Yes, indeed.
All right, go on.
So another one would be traditional. And when someone is driven by the traditional value, they like rituals. They like traditions that have procedures and process and instructions. They're looking for a book, if you will, the set of rules, the guidelines. So it could be somebody who really values operations or high-quality standards. It could also be someone with a religious set of rules, but they want these guidelines that enable them to work in an environment that says, here's how we do it, this is what enables us to be successful.
All right. Go on.
And the next one would be social. And somebody who has high social values wants to make a difference for other people. They want to solve people issues such as hate, poverty, homelessness, hunger, or political issues. And so they will often give a great deal of their time, resources, money to help others. And that's what really drives our nonprofit organization.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And the last one?
Individualistic. And when someone is driven by the individualistic value, they want to be at the table when decisions are made. They like to be in leadership positions. They want to know that their voice matters and that they are winning or leading a team. They love to be in world class, the best in the business. So they want to take their organization to the point of demonstrating that we are world class. We are best at what we do.
All right, so those are the six: utilitarian, aesthetic, theoretical, traditional, social, individualistic. When I was reading your book, Sean, one of the things that struck me is I'm a lot of those things. I'm not just one or the other. I've got some utilitarian in me. I've got some traditional in me, certainly some aesthetic in me, individualistic. So I'm really a hodgepodge, a melting pot of these. And I think anybody in a workplace has some of these characteristics to certain degrees.
You are right on. In fact, if you took the assessment, what you would see is that you don't score a zero in any of these. But what happens is there's a hierarchy. So there's two or three, Bill, that lock together that become the key motivator. And so, for example, if you put the social and the traditional together, they lock together, you'd be drawn to perhaps being a firefighter.
Okay.
Perhaps being a elementary school teacher.
Okay, all right. And so these are like building blocks. You can put them together, and the combinations that you come up with really lead you down a path towards your strength or your career, whatever personality that you have.
That's right. And when we understand what's motivating someone, what their core motivators are, we can then guide a conversation to be able to connect with them in a really meaningful way.
All right. Well, that's an interesting point, because that brings me to my next question. You know, the 12 conversations that you have that you've pinpointed in your book, Conversations for a Change, the most important one is the conversation for connection. Why is that the key?
Well, conversation for connection is the first one. I wouldn't necessarily say it's the most important
one. Oh, okay.
But it's the one that we start with when we are building a relationship or when we're reconnecting with someone. And what it does is it helps us to get to know the other person. It helps us to understand their communication style, their motivators, how they enunciate, how they focus on things, what their basic attitude is. So that as we evolve our relationship, it's being built on really understanding the other person, a level of trust, and showing connectedness.
All right. And how do you do this on the fly? Because you're not going to be able to walk up to everybody that you meet and say, here's a survey. Please take it so I can understand your style. How do you do it on the fly? And I'm going to give you a practical example. Give me some feedback on the type of person that you think I am to better communicate effectively, in other words, to connect with me.
Well, with communication style, when we learn how to people read someone else, we can very quickly identify where the person is coming from in the current moment, in the current conversation. And so if we understand the four basic communication styles, dominance, influence, steadiness, and compliance, we can look at what's happening right now. And given, if we've taught ourselves what each of these styles needs in communication, then we're better able to make sure that we're giving the other person what they do need so that the conversation can move forward in a healthy, great way.
All right, great. I get it. So what style am I based on our short, very brief conversation that we've had so far?
Well, based on these few minutes, I'm going to take a couple of guesses. You're in a format right now where you're following a series of questions that you've predetermined, but your desire to reach out and connect, your desire to do so in a public way would tell me that you probably have some high influence. You have high energy towards connecting with other people. and you probably want to get results at the same time.
Great. We're talking to Sean Kent Hayashi, everybody. Her book, Conversations for Change, 12 Ways to Say It Right When It Matters Most. And we only have a couple of minutes left, Sean, but in those few minutes that we have, let's put some picks and shovels into the hands of my listeners so they can get to work right away. What can listeners do to immediately start having conversations for a change?
Well, conversations for change really is one of the 12 conversations. And if we know that we have a big change that needs to occur, getting clear on what the change is, where are we now with our current state, where do we want to be, and then asking for what you want and doing it in a way that includes pictures, includes a variety of different methods of helping someone understand what the desired state is. Understanding the what next steps need to be involved also so that you provide someone a structure for how to get there.
Very good. We're talking to Sean Kent Hayashi, everybody. And Sean, just tell us a little bit about your book. Where is it available? Where would you direct people to go to learn more about you or your book?
Oh, thank you. Conversations for Change, 12 Ways to Say It Right When It Matters Most is available on all the online booksellers. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and you can also find out more information about me, Sean Kent Hayashi, at my website, seankent.com. So that's seankent.com, and I run an organization called the Professional Development Group.
All right, and we have just about a minute left, Sean. In that minute, I love to ask authors, what did you get out of writing Conversations for Change?
What did I get out of writing this book? I love the opportunity to coach people who want to be better communicators. And I worked with an executive in an organization many years ago who asked me the question, Sean, I feel like I'm missing something as a communicator. What's getting in my way? And I was able to see that he was avoiding conflicts. And so I fleshed out for him, taught him exactly how to do the conflict a resolution type of conversation. And he came back to me later and he said, okay, you taught me that one. What is the menu of conversations? And it really caused me to think this out. And so coming up with identifying the 12 different types of conversations that people need in order to be successful has enabled me to be more intentional in my own interactions and connections with others as well.
Oh, that's great. We've been talking to Sean Kent Hayashi, everybody. Her book, Conversations for Change. Thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
Oh, thank you, Billy.